Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Al Mean.
Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds. I'm Al Mean, and we will be speaking today about solutions for an evolving planet. Within the hearts of lightworkers everywhere, the light of the awareness of Earth as a conscious being burns brightly. We empower that which we focus on, and we bring about that which we fear. Great wisdom is needed in our primary relationship with Mother Earth so as not to increase her seeming distress by focusing upon it, yet acting responsibly in bringing the awareness of her as a living, sentient being into our daily lives. Paul, welcome. We have Paul St. John with us today, and I've asked him to, again, as he's done in previous shows, compile a list of questions that have come in from you, our listeners, in the form of emails, or that he himself has wanted to add in there, and we will attempt to answer them so that we can gain a clearer understanding of solutions for our evolving planet. Paul, welcome, and please go right ahead.
Sure. Well, I mean, as you know, many people have written to us asking about abundance. One person has asked if abundance for everyone is actually central in the curing the ills of the world. And if so, why would we not just cut off what is causing a lack of abundance and move forward from there? Why not simply rebuild our global economic structure so that it will empower abundance? Why not ensure abundance by boycotting the system that limits abundance?
Well, there's multiple questions there, so I think it's a very good idea to identify the root of the problems surrounding abundance. So let's start with that.
Okay.
The core problem of almost every addiction and material life is it comes down to our believing the mirrors we have surrounded ourselves with to be real and to have power over us. Our bondage stems from thinking that it is the cause and we are the effect, thereby making the mirrors real to us, you see. So we buy vitamins because we do not realize that by living the 12 pure emotions, the states of being and the heart energies, and folks can look those up on the website at www.belvaspata.com. But they provide our bodily nourishment. So the solution is that the more we see ourselves as the masters of our circumstances or the first cause, the more the external will manifest according to the abundant fullness of our being. As for opposing the system and fixing it, I generally avoid giving directions as to what people should make in their physical lives, but rather give eternal principles that they interpret into action in their own individual way. So we must remember, though, that we strengthen that which we oppose. So it's a different story when we see something before us that needs to be destructured in order to put a higher order in its place. But if we are not able, for instance, to destructure our government's spending habits, sitting there opposing it in our hearts day in and day out actually will strengthen it. So furthermore, every overcoming done by lightworkers brings us one step closer to the sacred government we have been told that awaits us. My life has been dedicated to bringing about the sacred mother's reign of peace on earth with the father that she created as her first creation by her side. So in fact, my students, and they're not students long, they enter into mastery very soon because of the the scope of the work that they're involved in, and myself are doing exactly as you propose. I have learned through multiple instances of mothers making sure that governments do not collapse before the sacred government is ready, that for the sake of children, old people, and just the general order of life, some government is better than none. So my own philosophy, therefore, is to change the mirrors by changing myself, staying within the law while finding the most fluid and creative way to make it work for me rather than against me. To stay out of the bondage of the financial system, stay out of debt. Because, you know, I can absolutely be sure that the person asking this question has debt. It is estimated that the average American home is 72 years in debt. If we take into consideration their, their income and how much they can pay off based on their income versus how much their debt is. So how can we say, oh, money is bondage, and instead put ourselves in that bondage? And because we're the ones that have gone into debt. Save for something, then buy it, rather than buying it and having to pay it off. Be ruthless and diligent about your debt. So, you know, I don't know if you have any questions written down regarding the attitude of light workers regarding abundance, but that might not be a very bad idea to tackle either. That's sort of a love-hate relationship, you know. Money is dirty, but give it to me.
Yes.
That sort of thing.
Yes, well, if you'd like to tackle that, you very well feel free.
Okay. So you don't have that one earmarked for some other train of thought then?
No.
Okay, let's take a look at that. And I want to tell them a story of grandfather. And grandfather was an ascended master that I had the privilege of seeing, but he also taught one who is another author named Tom Brown. And he wrote a very beautiful book called Grandfather, on grandfather's teachings. And although I haven't read a book, because the information pouring in day by day is so, abundant, that there is just not enough hours in the day for me to write it down, let alone just sit and take it in. I have not read books in, I would think, 8 to 10 years. But what we have is that he tells the story of grandfather who was from the Apache tribe near the Mexican border, and he was called at the age of 9 by spirit to leave his people and go, you know, and be a scout and be a medicine person. And he spent most of his life wandering the North and South American continents by himself in search of wisdom and led by spirit. So spirit told him to go up to the tundra and that he had to hurry to get there, because winter was coming, and of course he had to lay in supplies. And grandfather, as he very hastily walked up the west coast of America, he'd been down in Brazil, he walked up towards the tundra to get there on time. Grandfather was chafing under the thought that he needed to have so many tools. When animals lived freely, they ate what was there, and they seemed to survive just fine. Why did grandfather need shelter and clothing and a bow and arrow and all the things that he needed? Well, as he was walking up, when he got to an area in Washington, spirit told him to deviate off his course, and he was a little reluctant because he didn't want to arrive in the tundra in the dead of winter. But he told him, you know, he was quite firm that the spirit told him that he had to actually take a route and go near one of the mountains, and he would find there the cause that's called calling him there. Grandfather did locate it. He felt himself vibrating from head to toe when he saw a little cabin in a clearing way below, and the smoke coming out of the chimney. He lay in complete silence, in for days watching, and he saw that there was only one inhabitant, and it was an old man that lived very close to the land, made his own clothes from leather, made his own food and so on. And he lived much like a Native American, but he was a white elderly man. After days of watching him, he finally knocked on his door. The man asked him inside, and Grandfather spent several days there with him. And one day, they went out for a walk because Grandfather said that the time was drawing near for him to leave, and the bond had formed between them. And as he walked into the forest, he said to the old man, and now you must remember how astute Grandfather was. His name was Grandfather Stalking Wolf because he was actually able to stalk wolves. That was the hardest of all animals to stalk because of their very acute awareness. He could track over cement or a paved road somebody that had walked there. Grandfather said to the man, "What's that?" pointing at a dead ptarmigan game hen in the path ahead. The old man said, "What is that?" The old man said, "What? That's right. How can you not see it? It's right in front of us." He said, "But didn't you know I was blind?" The man was so adept at managing his environment, the grandfather never picked up that he couldn't see a thing. So it turned out that the bird was dead because they had imported these ptarmigan from up north to Washington, and it was too wet. And they were dying, even though they were imported as game for sport, they were dying because of the wetness. We will continue the story after our break.
The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Al Mean. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse, Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today. You've been walking between the worlds with Al Mean. To learn more about Al Mean and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back, and I shall now continue my story about the ptarmigan. Grandfather felt that something profound was waiting to reveal itself. When the old man bent down and took a few of the ptarmigan feathers, Grandfather put it in his medicine bag that hung around his neck, where only the most profound way-showing bits and pieces from his life were in. He then bid his leave and he walked back up to the north, and he arrived there working furiously, laying food by, putting his teepee in, getting himself ready for an Arctic winter. Finally, in the nick of time, Grandfather's preparations were done, and all the while he was wondering, why did he need this when the Arctic fox didn't, when the ptarmigan, which flourished up there, didn't, when the snowy owl didn't? Why could he not live like them? Finally, his preparations were complete, and the Arctic night had settled in, and he sat on a snowbank and watched the beautiful northern lights play across the sky. And all of a sudden, he felt deeply lonely and wished that he had someone to share it with. Grandfather looked down to the snowbank next to him, and he saw a little shiny black hole or spot. He couldn't understand what it was. He looked and looked. Could it be a spirit that was manifesting like that? One of his ancestors, perhaps? But as he looked closer, he realized that he was sitting right next to a ptarmigan, the little game hen had white feathers because he lived up in the snow, and he had buried himself into the snowbank, and only his little eye was sticking out. And he was watching Grandfather and watching the northern lights and enjoying the beauty right along with Grandfather. He had not seen any human being up that far north before, so he wasn't even afraid. Then Grandfather understood. The freedom that he had to walk from deserts to rainforests to tundra to snowy banks. He had walked many times back and forth across the northern United States. He was adept in cities where he hid and nobody could see him. He went there very rarely. But what made that possible, what gave him the freedom, was his tools. After that, he no longer chafed against the tools. Because unlike the ptarmigan that could not be transplanted anywhere else, because he didn't have tools, Grandfather's tools enabled him to go anywhere. After that, he gave love and gratitude for those tools. Money should be treated that way. It is freedom. Quite simply, freedom. Freedom for education, freedom to travel, freedom to attend workshops, to buy the books we need, to think of more than just survival. If we can love money, abundance comes. There's a little Ratatouille movie that some of them might have seen, and I'm sure you have, Paul. You've watched it with my daughter. But in the Ratatouille movie, the little rat wants to steal some food, and this little chef that's his conscience tells him, you should know better than that. You love to cook. Food comes to the one who loves to cook. Money will come to the one who loves money as a means of freedom. So that's a long, long monologue, and now we're up for your questions.
Well, thanks for sharing that story, Almina.
You're
welcome.
I'm sure
the listeners really appreciate it. I know it certainly changed my perception of money when I first heard that story as well, so thank you.
You're welcome.
I do have to say, however, that it still seems to me that the current way we achieve abundance is a little bit backwards, particularly in the context of some light workers, whereas even those with more awareness seem somewhat dependent on those with less awareness. For example, and this isn't in every situation, but in certain contexts, those with less awareness often need to buy the products and services in order to support those who are selling those. And I'm just wondering if it would not be a more accurate expression of mother for those with more awareness to simply be given abundance, and for sharing this awareness to simply be a part of their nature or their natural expression, which would sever any dependence on others receiving it. I hope that makes sense to you.
I'm not entirely sure what you're saying. Are you saying that... I'm not sure what you mean by the dependence of others receiving it.
Well, I guess it has to do with knowing so many light workers out there who struggle to promote their light, who do healings, who do share what they know, share their awareness in products and in various other means, and yet have a very hard time making ends meet because there needs to be a certain number of people who actually buy those products or those services. So it feels almost like those trying to uplift others are dependent on those who need uplifting. And it seems somewhat backwards.
Yes, that's true. Now, well, let's look at various aspects to what it is that you've said. Firstly, we have this with the Bell Vaspatar healing modality, which is a gift from the Holy Mother, as of the time when the laws changed to humanity to replace that which was taken. Bell Vaspatar, when one heals as an initiate, it, every time you use those symbols, it heals the soul group you're connecting to. For instance, recovering alcoholic, single mother, new age light worker, whatever it is that you have connected into as a group, that will be healed each time you heal with those symbols. If you become an adept, it starts to heal the larger picture, and it starts by the time you're a master, you are healing not only the planetary grids like you do as an adept, you're also starting to heal the lower levels of the cosmos. As a grandmaster, you heal the higher bodies of your patient, which is where a lot of disease is kept, and the constrictions have remained, because we've identified that disease actually no longer exists. But the restrictions remain sometimes in the upper bodies, in the form of a misalignment of some sort. So in grandmaster, you start to work with the upper bodies, and it heals the higher levels of the cosmos every time you heal. So for you to charge money for what you do, which is another thing that light workers have a push-pull with, first of all, they have a love-hate relationship with money a lot of times, and secondly, there's this guilt associated with taking money for sacred services. But if you do that every time you heal with Belvaspata, you are servicing such a large group, trillions of trillions of beings who reside in the cosmos, yet Mother gave us the sigils that would work to help heal them every time we heal the patient in front of us. The simplest way to affect change is by proxy. The patient becomes the proxy. No matter how much money we charge for that healing, we leave the cosmos in our debt. That's why Belvaspata is designed to bring abundance to its practitioner. So there's nothing wrong with charging when you're doing a service of that magnitude. So that's the first thing. We need to discard the old, oh shucks, I shouldn't be charging attitude as we do that. Then the other thing is this. I do believe that it's not a helpful idea for us to say, I'm doing my highest calling, I'm quitting my job, I'm foregoing the pension or whatever it is you are getting and the benefits, I'm just simply going to put out my shingle and start healing. It is not a very sound policy to start out like that unless you have some sort of a backup supply. It takes a while for people to know that you're there. You can have the best product in the world, and if nobody knows that it's there, nobody's going to come and buy it. You could be the best healer doing the most incredible miracles. It takes a while for people to know that. So you just don't step from one stepping stone to another if the gap is too big. You put a little bridge across. The bridge should be in the form of savings to enable you to get yourself established in your new business, or in whatever form it is, or you start to do it part-time in addition to your job. That way you've got your bases covered, you put a little bit of money away each month, so that at some point that bridge, you might just need another foot or so on it, but you heal and you are paying your bills with your other job. That way you don't become desperate in your need, and that, again, closes down supply. Mother has, in fact, to get a little more specific about your question, Mother has written in the Book of Life that light workers will get more abundance and more support for all the service that they've given. If we can just let go of our previous belief systems, this reality is available to us.
Well, thank you, Almeen. That's I'm sure, wonderful news to many listeners, and that
yes.
Helps put things in perspective much, much more. So I'm going to go back to the very first question of yours. You used the example of taking vitamins, inferring that this can sometimes be a way of empowering the belief that external things can actually make us healthy. In light of, in light of this idea, I have also been wondering about the importance of eating healthy food and how this differs for those who have entered immortal mastery or godhood. Are the choices we make regarding what we eat still powerful statements which affect the cosmos? And can we work on something more subtle, for example, like the loneliness resulting from an undeveloped relationship with mother, by working on letting go of foods we might try to substitute for this relationship?
Good question. Let's tackle this one's answer when we get back from our commercial break, and we invite our listeners to join us then.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power, Belvaspana, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almaine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almaine. To learn more about Almaine and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Food and spirituality, that is a big question. Welcome back, and we will uncover some of the laws that govern food versus spirituality. First of all, toxins in the organs, toxicity in the bloodstream, cannot remain there when enlightenment comes. So in other words, I went into immortal mastery in, it was January of 2004 that I went into the first phase. It was January of 2005 that I went into January 2005 when I went into the first phase of ascended mastery. 3 months prior to that, one day I woke up and was told, quite simply, announce that at this time you will detoxify. All parasites, viruses, bacteria, the whole works. It started to come out, it poured through my skin. Even anesthetics that had been given to me from a dentist when I was, years back, I could smell them coming through the skin. I had to bath 3 times a day. It poured out, and this continued for 3 months straight. It stopped immediately when I entered into my ascended mastery. So I had one of my students that followed behind, and she's actually the content editor of our first book, A Life of Miracles. She followed behind me a few months later. She eats vegan food. She grows it herself. She eats nothing but raw. Her body detoxed exactly the same way to go into her ascended mastery. One way or the other, every time you move up levels, you will detoxify. Even when you start to wonder what in the world is left to detoxify, you still detoxify because you have eaten foods in between, or because you have taken on toxicity on behalf of others, but you detoxify as you go through the stages. On the flip side, because toxins hold old patterns, it is easier when you eat purer foods, you drink clear, good water regularly, it is easier for perception to change and old patterns to release. So there is a symbiotic relationship. when you get to the immortal mastery stage, which I reached in the last Thursday of February 2005, you must bring your body into immortal mastery, not just the transfiguration that occurs in the fields around the body. This is done by living in eternal time. Mother had me sit for 1 week, no phones, no music, no faxes, nothing. I didn't even go to the store, saved up the food I needed for that week, nothing else but sit. The profoundest and deepest bliss imaginable settled in my being. I have lived in eternal time ever since. Living in eternal time does not allow toxins to build up in the body. Toxins build up from the tension you feel in the body when you're living, in fact, in linear time. So when you do that, then the body becomes immortal during that phase as well. And at that point, whether you eat or you don't really doesn't matter. Like, Paul, you work here in as our office manager in our Newport office, and so the office is out of my home, and you have seen me go weeks without a meal.
Yes, I have.
You see, because I just don't really get hungry anymore, but I enjoy food, so I will eat when I feel like it.
And yet, but, cooking miraculous ones for us.
Well, that doesn't, you know, it doesn't allure me because the hunger isn't there. So food, outside vitamins, when we are in ego identification, meaning that we are still living with an internal dialogue in the head and not from the place of complete silence, is important. After that, it starts to vary.
Well, thank you, Almin, for that. I was also wondering how we can use food as a way to, and cleansing ourselves from those toxins as a way to function by proxy for the cosmos and for purifying the earth.
Oh, wonderful idea. Especially when one goes into the higher levels where you don't need to eat, Paul, like yourself. To undergo voluntarily a purging on behalf of the cosmos, on behalf of the earth, on behalf of the environment or humanity is a great service. And it is a great act of devotion and love. And one can simply do it by proxy. Proxy, meaning that you stand in for a bigger picture, is the simplest way to effect change in the cosmos. If we want to be free from the bondage of money, we have to be free from the bondage of debt. By proxy, we can free ourselves and say this is by proxy for nations everywhere that are in debt, for the people in those nations that are in debt, and for banking institutions that are in debt, and large funds, for example. You can do things by proxy, for sure, but you first have to get yourself to that state.
Right. Yes, that's very important, I think, for everyone to hear. I mean, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about going further with I guess, assisting in this concept of assisting the Earth and the cosmos as well, because they're very intimately connected in their evolution, and also all the our fellow brothers and sisters in their evolution. As we do this, can you talk about how we discern when to cherish imperfection and when to strive for perfection?
Okay, and we'll define them, because if imperfection means a blind spot in one's vision or a portion of emotion which is distorted, one should never value imperfection. If, however, by imperfection one means that we are on a never-ending journey of discovery and that all cannot be known at once, in other words, that it is the nature of the journey, it should be regarded as the simple movement of balance. So perhaps what we should do then is let's just tackle both.
That sounds great.
Now, firstly, if imperfection as blind spots or distorted emotions They must be understood, of course, that blind spots yield distorted emotion and vice versa. It is never acceptable to indulge it in oneself as a form of self-pity, nor in another, if they have specifically asked for you to be their teacher in some way. A child, for example, in our stewardship, would fall in that latter category where you are their teacher. Many teachers indulge flaws in perception in their students because it makes them popular, a tremendous disservice to the trust which that student places in the teacher. So, however, flaws in others. Now, this is a different matter. Because say, for example, that you have a family member who is difficult to get along with. You take the time to acknowledge that whatever that coworker or family member is mirroring to you is something within yourself that you've not forgiven or that you reject or that you have yet to work on. Or it is giving you the opportunity to become a commander in the boat of destiny in your own life. You take time to be fully grateful for that person allowing you to see whatever insight is provided. Then you take time to heal it within yourself. Have you been feeling victimized by the other's conduct? Take the time to forgive yourself for such limited vision, for you are the center of power of your entire cosmos. As you forgive and love these pieces of yourself, your coworker will change. He or she will now mirror the next level that you have to get within yourself. And again, you come back to yourself and the process is repeated and then they change again and so you go back and forth. As you change your coworker is also changing you. This is an autonomous relationship. And this type of relationship with the seemingly external world creates within you the master that you already are at deeper levels. It also eliminates any concept of being a victim. This acknowledges that the person cannot act the way he or she does unless something in you has called it forth. It is the acknowledgement of the one heart. Now, some call this the unified field or the interconnectedness of life that bonds all together. It brings responsibility for your environment fully back to yourself. This should not be interpreted as blaming oneself or having to feel guilt for others' mistakes. It could simply, for example, be that we still allow others to affect the quality of our day, or we may still believe that others can do things to us without our having written the script. But these are lessons that everyone must learn at some point. Let's take a short commercial break.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Elmin experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness and leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Elmi's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Almeen.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almeen. To learn more about Almeen and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. And in our final segment, we are going to try and answer as many questions as we can fit into this little bit of time. But the next portion that I wanted to tackle is how to deal with imperfection, as we've been discussing, as it's defined when it is the flow of life or the nature of the journey. When one lives in a state of expanded awareness, it is easier to overpolarize into a state of beingness and call life perfect. But it is not so. It is the slight ripples of irritation that travel across the screen of our minds or play upon our feelings that indicate where action is needed or where insight must be gotten. Such an emotion has traditionally been viewed as unenlightened by truth seekers. The key to enlightened irritation, if you will, is that it is in regards to the situation, not the person. In other words, we honor that each person is doing their part at whatever level they are capable of, but situations which need to change will trigger irritation as a guidance system. The pure frequency that I've mentioned in the Ring of Truth, there are 12 pairs of these pure frequencies, are what lead us to what is life-enhancing and desirable. Irritation is a sign of what is not life-enhancing and needs to change. So without it, one can end up accepting the unacceptable, which is not saintly, let alone godly. It's dysfunctional. So imperfection as the flow of life will be signaled by the ripples of irritation. And it's just part of changing things before us and making the journey smoother.
Wow, Almeen, thank you. That's definitely, I think, a far more advanced interpretation of enlightenment than many we receive out there on our journey. Thank you for incorporating the ability to be irritated into that. And
yes.
I think it's quite important.
People assume that that person cannot possibly be masterful, you know, when there's irritation.
Yes, exactly. Well, one thing that you might know I find a little bit irritating is sometimes, being your office manager, I end up getting hearing some people being critical from their perspective of you not doing as much as they would expect for the environment. And I think it would be helpful for people to see how vastly more effective it is to work on these seemingly external circumstances by working in and on our own internal realities. So if you wouldn't mind, could you explain to our listeners all the work that has in fact been done on behalf of the environment by yourself and during the weeks you share with the masters who attend your classes?
Oh, my gosh.
I know there's far more than you can pack into the last 10 minutes, but maybe just give us a couple examples.
All right. Example. On numerous occasions, there have been the transmuting, for instance, that there are groups of angels working to transmute some of the chemicals that they spray next to next to the road by changing it to nutrients and wildflower seeds. So they will actually work on changing that physical substance of chemicals in these plants to something completely different than what people think they are spraying out there. Now, this is just a minimal example, but, you know, I was in the middle of speaking at one time with a group of little divas when they suddenly got called away. There was a nuclear accident. Now, it was a smallish situation that's not going to make the world headlines, but it was in China. And they were immediately called away because there's a specific group that's been assigned by Mother to deal with radioactivity in the soil and in waters. So there's that. I know, for instance, that Mother has had, in conjunction with the God of Nature and the God of the oceans, she has had a specific being brought to the earth that is a master at making plants. And the first order for him that he had to make is he had to create plants that absorb oil out of the ocean. Because a lot of the oil that's walking, you know, running into the ocean from our sewage systems and so on in some places is not totally purified, and this is a problem. So they've produced plants that absorb this oil. One of my own situations that I was involved in is that Mother told me to create a spaceport that will, it transports things through space. And although it will no longer work because of where we are in space at this point, we are not where we think we are. There's a hologram around this planet to make us think that things are still the way they should be, the way we think they should be. But we have moved from our position in space, fulfilling the prophecy in Revelations that says there will be a new heaven and a new earth. So we are... you know, we're not able to use that spaceport, but I describe it fully in Secrets of the Hidden Realms. But there are mountains and mountains and mountains of plastic bags of garbage that the East Coast cities cart out in barges into the sea on the East Coast of America and dump there. Wow. And the ones that had been dumped since the 60s were starting to leak. And so Mother had me create two separate spaceports that move up and down two separate areas. And the spaceports had an additional component put in that would first dematerialize it. To dematerialize those old mountainous areas that were starting to leak, and then to not only dematerialize it, but then to transport it into the sun. She dematerialized it so that it would not be a burden to the sun. But this is going day and night, and it cleans approximately 10% more than what is being dumped.
Mm-hmm.
So that is an example of how Mother is taking care of it. Now, I often have my students ask me, why is it that, you know, we can't see the difference? We can see the difference, but we're still reading statistics that were written maybe 2 years ago. Massive changes in the environment has been made during what we think is the last 2 years. It's been much more time than that, but, you know, we are like the child that sits in the middle of the merry-go-round and doesn't see how fast the merry-go-round is going for the one on the outer edge. As the Earth has become the pivot point of the cosmic ascension that I've mentioned so many times, and as such, we don't realize that we have shot past 2012. We are well beyond where we thought all these big disasters would happen, and many changes have been made since those statistics were generated. One of my students from Galveston, Texas, says that for the first time, the filthy, filthy Galveston River is much cleaner. They can actually now catch fish in it. Some of my Native American elder friends say to me that when they go on their vision quests in the deserts, that for the first time there are pools of wildflowers growing.
Wow.
I worked, Mother gave me the work to do. I worked in conjunction with several incredible masters and angels as well as one whale master, which is called the Great White Master. And the angel Metatron was involved in this as well as the nature god Pan. But we worked for close to a month on the soils of the earth. The Mongolian area of the Gobi Desert, it was so bad, the soil there, from previous atomic explosions that had happened long ago there. It was a minus one or two on the scale of soil and how good soil is. It was that poor. And the other thing that Mother has done is that the plant forms being destroyed in the Amazon basin, she has had angels transfer to the deserts. The climates are being changed. The fulfillment of a prophecy given in the New Testament that speaks about the time when the desert will blossom as the rose is being prepared for. I am not concerned because I know the environment is in good hands. Paul, thank you very much for what you've contributed to today's program. And to our listeners, thank you for being with us. We can always feel you close, and it is a joy to share your presence today. Thank you, and we will speak with you next week.
We hope you have enjoyed today's show, Walking Between the Worlds with Al Meehan.